This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us. It is hour number two. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. We're also going to talk to Josh Alper, Pro Football Talk, on this weekend's NFL games and things from the news. Last night, Cincinnati overcame a 14-0 halftime deficit. They beat Jacksonville 24-21. They kicked a field goal with no time left on the clock to improve now to 3-1 on the season. And Jacksonville, unfortunately, drops to 0-4. But don't forget, we flipped the calendar now, and we are heading into October. And baseball is now really heating up. Congratulations to the Atlanta Braves for winning the NL East yesterday. Their magic number was 1 against Philadelphia. They beat the Phillies yesterday and have clinched the division. Also, the Houston Astros, with a victory, a 3-2 victory over the Tampa Bay Rays, have clinched the AL West. And as we head into the final weekend of the season, the Yankees lead the American League wildcard standings. They have won 8 of their last 7 games, so things are starting to really heat up. Now, listen, last year we had a very odd postseason because of COVID, right? We were doing these neutral site games, and, you know, teams, you know, went, they did the World Series in Arlington, and that sort of spared the Astros this sort of big, huge booing for the cheating scandal. Now, when I think about what they could face on the road in this playoffs, I'm curious. Is that still a thing? You know, we have a very short attention span. Sometimes we have a long attention span, and sometimes those memories never go away. But I wonder where the cheating scandal for the Astros fits, right? Where does it fit? Are they still bitter about it? Are they still mad about it? Will they boo this team mercilessly as we head into the home, you know, the road contest for them? Or will people sort of forget about it and just be excited that they can fill the stadiums for playoff baseball for the first time in two seasons? I'll be interested. I think this Astros team is really, really good. Obviously, Dusty Baker has done a marvelous job replacing A.J. Hinch. But you look at where the American League is, right, with the White Sox, with the Yankees on fire heading into the postseason. You've got the Tampa Bay Rays with 98 wins on this season, that home field advantage throughout the, if you want to call it that, a Tropicana Field. So interesting look at where the Astros might fit in all of this in the American League. But coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb, and we'll get into the NFL with Josh Alper later on this hour as we continue with Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue along with Wake Up Call this morning, Friday edition, as we set you into the weekend with the good and the bad and the dumb. But we start with the good of the day.
The good of the day. You know, I might be on an island here, but I do believe that the good of the day is the Super Bowl halftime show that was announced yesterday.
I saw that. I was so excited, I guess.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean,
right?
I'm not on the page of, oh, this is already going to be the greatest halftime show ever. No, you know, we got to see it before it actually happens. But I do believe it's a step up from last year's.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know why. I kind of like the collaboration, and I love the idea of it being a hometown artist.
Yeah, it's like a lot of L.A. guys are going to be doing
this.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
it's pretty good.
If you didn't know, the lineup includes, the lineup is featuring Dr. Dre, Kendrick Lamar, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, and Snoop Dogg.
All right. And so how many of those are from Los Angeles?
Definitely Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, and I believe Kendrick Lamar is. I'm not sure on Mary J. Blige. Eminem, we all know, is from Michigan.
Michigan, right. All right, that works.
So, but yeah, you know, this one, it should be a lot of fun. It, you know, it probably, I'm excited to see how SoFi handles it. Because I got to imagine, like, that stadium is just incredible looking. The pyrotechnics or the theatrics that stadium can provide will be incredible.
Yeah, I think it'll be great. But isn't this what we kind of thought was going to happen when Dr. Dre and the NFL kind of came together?
Yeah.
Like, well, they were going to put together something like this that was going to be pretty big for the halftime?
I think so.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just, I like the, I want them to continue, like, wherever, what city you're going to have it in, make it about, you know, the artist from that town.
Okay, I like that idea.
You know,
I can get bored that
kind of
idea.
Kind of celebrate, you know, highlight, you know, the genre of that era or of that area, I should say.
They've done that before. Didn't, like, wasn't Jennifer Lopez and Shakira, weren't they part of, like, Miami because of the culture there?
Yeah,
and
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, they've kind of done that. They've dabbled in it. You're right. They've dabbled in it. No, that was a tribute to Prince in Minnesota.
Yeah, Justin Timberlake.
Prince was in Miami.
Prince was in Miami in the rain.
Yeah, so, yeah, I get it. So. Like, they didn't bring, like, the Beastie Boys in New York when it was in New York,
no,
right?
No. I don't remember which one was in New York.
I don't remember it was in New York.
I mean, a lot of times they just try to get, like, the, you know, whoever the hottest artist is at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment. And I remember when they, you know, they, like, Katie, like it's so hard. Like, you can't, you have to nail it because the arrows come at you. If you don't
quickly.
Nail it perfectly.
Yeah.
And they come quickly because people want to crap on the halftime show.
They do.
They want to badly to
and
crap on it.
And last year's The Weeknd gave them all.
Oh, yeah.
All
that's right.
When he went through that Hall of Mirrors or whatever it was. And you're just like, yeah. I don't even get what's going on anymore.
And I'm really bad at that. I remember years ago the Black Eyed Peas performed. And I thought they did a good job. I'm like, all right, they did. And then I went on Twitter. I'm like, oh, they didn't do a good.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm going to keep my mouth shut because I actually thought they were decent.
Yeah.
Oh,
now,
goodness.
You brought up. I liked the Katy Perry one.
I did too. I thought the Katy Perry one was.
And
really
the only
good.
Thing they really made fun of was Left Shark.
Left Shark. That was it. Other than that, she was great.
Yeah.
I thought Lady Gaga was good.
Yep.
See, again, I'm the bad person because I just go, eh, it's good. I mean, yeah. I don't expect it. What do people want out of a halftime show, for crying out loud? What do they want? It's like a secondary act to the football game, right? I mean,
yeah, I don't. You're getting
free entertainment. Like, what do you want?
You know what's it? Yeah, what are they supposed to prove? These artists,
right? Exactly. Like, if you paid for, all right. So if you paid for the ticket to see the halftime show, like it was a concert, maybe you'd have a right to complain. But you're sitting at home eating junk food with your friends watching a football game, and they go, oh, here's a musical act from a very famous musical group, and you go, ugh, this is garbage.
It's terrible.
I hate it.
I
can't
stand
it.
Why do I watch this?
Right. So
I
think people
like,
it's a halftime show. Just chill.
Let's have fun with it. But I think this should be entertaining. It should be
I do
good.
Too. I think it's good. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is something we're not needing come Sunday night.
Okay, which
and
is?
It's Tom Brady being under the weather.
Oh, is he sick?
Well, I'll let you be the judge, all right? This is he was answering some questions yesterday. And visually, you know, he looked kind of pale. But it's really, you know, the combination of that plus the voice.
All right, let's hear it.
Care for them other than a normal bonus.
I think it's probably, you know, most difficult to play against them. I think preparing is one thing. I think playing is a whole nother thing. So they're a lot of great players. Obviously well coached. They all play.
Did anybody ask him if he was sick?
I don't think anyone asked him.
I don't think anybody either. I immediately knew. Well, it was set up, obviously.
Yeah.
But you don't even need the setup. You could tell he's not sounding good.
And we don't want that. I want him to be at 100%. I want Belichick to be at 100%. I want everything. I want this to be become the instant classic we're all thinking it will become.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want Flugate Part 2.
Oh, God, you imagine?
I don't want that.
You know, like before we were saying that, you know, the only outcome we know won't happen is the Patriots blowing out the Buccaneers. And if that was to happen because Tom Brady was sick,
right,
we would instantly, it would instantly become Flugate.
The NFL is not rescheduling this thing anytime soon. Like, the Buccaneers are not scheduled to play the Patriots in Foxborough for like 8 years. Now, with this new additional game, I guess there is a way that they can play each other like in 2 years or 3 years. I'm not really all finely tuned into how the extra 17th game works.
And honestly, I mean, I'm not 100% certain that Brady will be around in 8 years.
Right, exactly. So, like,
you know, seven, maybe. Eight, you're pushing it.
Let's talk to all of the scientists he has on staff for TB12 to make sure he gets all the right vitamins and nutrients
juices
to be ready to go.
And,
right.
You know, the root of a plant we've never heard of.
Absolutely. Go do it, Tom.
Yeah.
Make sure you're healthy.
Inhale everything.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's so scary. Now I'm nervous.
Yeah, I know. I mean, just when you hear his
voice. I don't
want
to see Kyle Trask going up against the Patriots.
Is that who the backup is?
I think so.
Is Josh Rosen? No, Josh Rosen's not on that team. He's on another team.
All right, what is the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is I'm going to give it to Elon Musk.
Oh, we've done this before with Elon Musk, so he's gotten a couple of these dumbs.
He's gotten a couple of these. Well, this one, I mean,
even though he's a certified genius.
He's a certified genius, I'll give him that. And happens to be the world's richest man once again.
Okay, did he beat Jeff Bezos?
He slid ahead of Jeff Bezos the other day. His net worth is topping a little over $200 billion. Jeff Bezos.
$200 billion?
Yeah, Jeff Bezos dipped a little bit. He dipped down to like 193.
What are we talking about? $200 billion.
$200 billion. But that's not what's dumb. What's dumb is, these two kind of have like a little feud, a little rivalry, a rich man rivalry, if you will. And Elon Musk is doing what any rich man would do, and that is creating a large digit 2 statue.
Yo, is he?
And sending it to Jeff Bezos.
Oh, very good. Well, as long as the feud's rolling along.
So, I mean, this is why it's dumb. You have so much money that you're going to commission someone to create a statue of the number 2 and have that shipped, hopefully via Amazon.
You know, let me tell you, man, you know what, there's when you have $200 billion, and I've said this before, if I was that rich, I'd have an office that does nothing but scour the world for hard luck cases that I can alleviate one person at a time. Like family loses their house in a fire. They didn't have insurance or whatever I could find. I would just have people going, look through the internet, find stories of heartache where people need money and we'll give them the money.
One day a week.
But the other thing is, on the flip side, the dangerous side of having that much money is that you can have people killed and they would never trace it back to you.
Yeah.
Like you have enough money to put enough layers between you saying, I want this person assassinated. And there's enough money to shield you from being implicated in any of that. And no wonder these billionaires are like hunting humans on islands for fun. What can you do with that much money?
In a lifetime.
That you just, what, how many trips around the world? How many luxury experiences before you go, I can't.
Look at it this way. They're done cruising the world. Now they're going into space.
Yeah. Okay, let me give you an example. I remember the first time I went on an airplane when I was a kid, right? I loved it. I thought it was awesome. All kids do. Like we're flying. This is great, right? The takeoff, all of that. As I got in my career and I was traveling a lot, I was like, I hate airports. I hate flying. I'm one of those people, I like traveling. I like travel, but I don't like traveling.
Yeah.
I don't like getting to the destination.
I don't like being on planes. There.
I like being there if I could teleport myself. So if you got me on a Gulfstream jet, right, I would be like, I could live on this. This is great. But to Elon Musk, he's probably like, I don't want to get on that stupid plane again. Like, I'm not even going to go. Like, it's luxurious, everything that you want, but he's probably so used to it. What do you do with your life when there's nothing to obtain? There's no, what do you occupy your time with? Spaceships?
I mean, that's the next step. Right? I think after that, it's, you know, if it was me, it would be like, all right, well, let me commission and a submarine that can dive deep down and have light so I can see things that no one else has seen.
Now, that would be a cool idea. Like, if you could invent a submarine that goes super deep where you could see crazy creatures.
Yeah, because I don't know.
Giant squids and stuff. That would be fine.
I don't know what's next.
I don't either.
I mean, it's literally, I mean, like you said, I'm certain Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, you know, name any rich man. They've been to, we sit here and we go, how many states have you been to? Right, I can rattle off like I've been to this state, I've been to that state, I've done this, I've done that. They probably do that with countries.
Yeah,
how many countries you've been to? I was like, I've been to them all. There isn't a country I haven't set foot on. I haven't spent the night in yet.
He should seriously find a dormant volcano and build a villain lair.
He should.
Piranha Pit, Shark Tank,
just
laser,
because
laser thing, stealing missiles, it opens up. An army that comes from nowhere where people aren't even, you know, people don't even know they're missing. You ever notice those villains in those Bond movies have like armies of people and nobody ever knows who they are, or what they are, how they even got employed there in the first place? Henchmen. I'd have henchmen. If I was a billionaire, absolutely I'd have henchmen. I totally would. Jaws and whoever, you know, I'd have a bunch of those guys. But yeah, when you got $200 billion, I got to think life starts to get gets boring.
$200 billion. I mean, you can give up half. Just, you know, say I'm just going to give $100 billion up to charities around the world. You're still $100 billion.
I know. It's crazy.
I just don't.
I'd buy a state and kick everybody out of it.
Like, I read the story the other day. This is how far removed it. Okay. I read the story the other day. There was a couple in Louisiana, right, who the bank mistakenly put, I think, $50 billion into their account.
Oh, boy.
Right? It was a mistake. I mean, obviously, the bank was quick to fix it. But for a brief amount of time, they were the 25th richest people in the world.
With $50 billion.
Which is $50 billion, you're top 25.
When I was a kid, that would have been easily number one.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it was unfathomable. Like, remember, like, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett? I mean, it was unfathomable for them to be over $100 million.
Yeah, exactly.
Or $100 billion, I should say.
It's crazy.
Yeah, or now crazy. We're talking $200 billion.
Well, good for you, Elon Musk.
Get that number two out there.
Still, I can't wait for the tunnel to Dodger Stadium that you're supposed to still be building.
Yeah.
So can't wait for that.
And there are other things, too.
Yeah, should be doing some other things, too.
Yeah.
All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Again, Josh Alper, Pro Football Talk, will join us. We'll talk NFL with him. That's coming up in 15 minutes as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to your curbside. You can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Josh Alper will join us in about 10 minutes. We'll talk NFL with him, including last night. I'll get his take on Urban Meyer. I know we talked about it last hour. Just frustrating, and we don't look at other rookie coaches in that same way. We look at Urban Meyer in that same way because he had so much success at college. He's making the jump to the NFL. We're wondering if this is a good idea. They're 0-4. They had a lead in that game last night. They lose on a last-second field goal. They had a 2-touchdown lead at halftime and didn't turn the ball over. You should win those games. I don't care if you got a rookie quarterback. I don't care if you're rebuilding. In the NFL, if you're up 2 touchdowns and you don't turn the ball over, at some point you should win the game. You should find a way to win the game. And he didn't. So we'll talk to Josh Alper about that. We'll also talk about the game on Sunday night between the Patriots and the Buccaneers and a lot of other different issues around the league. So I want to say a week ago, maybe a little less than that, maybe a little more than that, I taped the Muhammad Ali PBS Ken Burns documentary. Unfortunately, it was four parts, and I only taped part 3 and 4. And so I finally, yesterday afternoon, I watched it. I watched part 4, which was what I was really interested in. I was really interested in his fight against George Foreman, his fight against was it Larry Holmes that closed out his career? Joe Frazier, of course, in the Philippines. I wanted kind of to get the sort of background of those fights. I kind of know it. I've seen enough Muhammad Ali documentaries. I don't know about you. I still find Muhammad Ali one of the most fascinating athletes in the history of sports.
Easily.
I still to this day, even though we now live in a different world than Muhammad Ali was in the 60s and 70s, where globalization, like you can be an NFL player and be popular around the world, even amongst countries that don't know much about the NFL. Like there's a smallness to the world now that Muhammad Ali didn't have to, he had to navigate a lot differently. But you know what, it hit me, and I'm watching this documentary, and they're talking about his post-fight career. So he fights Larry Holmes. He loses. He fights Trevor Burbick. He loses. He's done. Okay, he's done fighting. He's now in his late 30s. He's done. And what does he do in retirement? He goes around the world. He's like an ambassador. Everywhere he goes, he is stopping the country. right? He stops the country. Everybody comes out to see him. He's on trucks going through little tiny towns in Africa or the Philippines or anywhere. It didn't matter. Anywhere he went, they're lining the streets to see him like the Pope. You know, he's one of the most recognizable non-political figures in the globe. He is the people's champion, right? He is one of the most popular people on the planet. And you really, when you stop and think about it, the most popular person on the planet was from Louisville, Kentucky. Like that's where he was born. Louisville, Kentucky created the most popular figure in the globe during his time. And it really sort of hit me like that. Like to imagine to be born in a town like Louisville or Nashville or Dallas or any place like that, and somehow circumstances worked in your life so that by the time you were in your 20s, you were a global icon. And by the time you were in your 30s, people were pouring out of the streets in every city in the world to get a glimpse of you. There was one part in the documentary where they said he went to made a pilgrimage to Mecca. And while he was making a pilgrimage, that people in those countries, then he was visiting other countries, but he went to Mecca, he made his pilgrimage, and then he was going out of the countries in the Middle East. Where he was going, they had to call him Muhammad Ali Clay because they needed to differentiate him from everybody else that was born and named Muhammad Ali in the period of time where he was the heavyweight champion of the world. And then they get to the fight in the Philippines. Now, by the way, the fight in Zaire with George Foreman and the fight in the Philippines were basically dictators paying a fortune to have those fights in their country, which at the time, I guess people sort of raised a little bit of a ruckus, but didn't seem to bother most people. When he got to the Philippines, he taunted Joe Frazier so bad, it was almost embarrassingly bad. But those two fought a classic fight. And if you know the history of that fight, Joe Frazier's camp stopped the fight. Stopped it. It was hot. It was humid. The fighters were on the verge of death. It really was. I mean, it was exhausting, physically exhausting. They were pummeling each other so bad that people thought somebody's going to collapse. It was so hot. And Joe Frazier's camp stopped the fight, and Muhammad Ali was heavyweight champion of the world. And when the guys who were there talked about it, you know, and that's what I like about documentaries. They can really bring a level of sort of like understanding as to what you were seeing. And one of the writers had said they were not fighting for the heavyweight champion of the world. And he listed all the titles that was up for grabs, the different divisions of boxing that were up for grabs. And he goes, they weren't fighting for this. They weren't fighting for this. They weren't fighting for this. What they were fighting, it was truly a fight between two men who just did not like each other. It became two guys that weren't fighting for something, a belt. They were just fighting each other. And neither one of them wanted to quit until the other one was subdued. Like, we don't really get that anymore in boxing. I've sort of lost track of boxing. I lost track of the magnitude of the sport, right? I kind of grew up with Mike Tyson, and you would watch to see him pummel opponents, and then you go, oh, this is fun. He knocked out a guy in 90 seconds. Next. Who's up now? Next. But imagine a real heavyweight fight. Ron, have we really had one in our lifetime?
No.
Right? A real, I'm in this camp, he's in that camp. These guys, I don't know who's going to win. These are two guys. I can see this guy winning. I can see that guy winning. They're yelling at each other. They're making fun of each other. They're in this exotic place, and we're all going to watch it around the world, and they're going to be in the ring for 15 rounds, beat the heck out of each other because they don't like each other, and we're going to have one winner. That was Frazier Ali in the Philippines. And I feel like I was deprived of that because I watched that going, as a sports nut and a sports historian and a sports geek, I would have ate that up if I was alive at that time. I would have ate that alive. And I never got to see anything like that in my lifetime. Nothing on that magnitude, like the fight in Zaire. Great documentary. Ken Burns does a pretty good job. Really good stuff. Talk to Josh Alper next on the NFL.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, NFL heading into week number four. We'll go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com, talking some NFL. How are you, Josh?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Let's get to last night. I understand people's fascination with seeing Urban Meyer make this leap into the NFL. He looked very frustrated last night. We're not making the same sort of looks at other rookie coaches. But what exactly is that team looking a little better to you?
Yeah, look, they looked the best they've looked all season last night. And I think Trevor Lawrence looked the best he's looked. I think, you know, the wasn't explosive. They ran the ball well. They didn't ask him to do as much. And he didn't, you know, he didn't have to press. He didn't turn the ball over. That's a very good formula for them to try and use going forward. I think it's something that, you know, we've seen all the rookie quarterbacks struggle, and one of the reasons why is they just aren't getting any support. I mean, these guys are playing on bad teams for the most part, and they don't have that kind of support. The Jags gave it to Lawrence last night, and that's, you know, that's the way to move forward. That's the step forward, and I think really the whole game came down to that fourth down stop right before halftime. If Lawrence gets in there and it's 21-0 at halftime, I think you're looking at a Jaguars team that got their first win last night.
Are we being too harsh as a football culture on Urban Meyer? No one thought this team would be good, so why are we thinking it should have been?
I think that some of it has been the reaction and some of the things that Meyer said and. You know, the secondhand comment, you know, we're playing Alabama every week, and, yeah, and this sort of like were you, like, just as no one should be surprised by Urban Meyer and the Jaguars having a tough time early, like, is Urban Meyer really surprised that it's not just rolling over and stomping teams like you did at Ohio State? Of course it's a huge step up. Of course it's something. And I don't know that he was, you know, the way that that's recounted, that, you know, I think that can be very flippant if things had gone another way. I think that a lot of the baggage Meyer brought with him from the way he left Florida, the way he left Ohio State, as a guy who some people saw as, when things got tough, he took the first exit, that's something people are looking at for him in the NFL, that this is going to be hard, maybe even harder than Urban Meyer thought. Is he really going to be in it for the long haul? And I think that's something that, you know, people are going to still wonder about throughout, just because of his history. And, you know, that if it's not going to be something he's great at, that he's not going to be bothered to take the time to become better at it.
All right, the much anticipated game between the Patriots and the Buccaneers on Sunday night. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff before the game and a lot of conversation about the legacies of these two guys and what it means to have them kind of at opposite ends of the field. But, Josh, what do you think from an X's and O's standpoint, one of the greatest quarterback minds who reads defenses better than anybody and one of the greatest defensive minds who can devise things up that you don't expect?
Well, I think there's a huge, just a vast disparity right now between the two teams. I think the Buccaneers are a much better team than the Patriots, and there's going to be tons of emotion. There are going to be tons of things playing into the start of that game that are going to make it, you know, ripe for something, you know, something big to happen, because someone's making an emotional play. Somebody's doing something a little more amped up, a little more charged up than they might be another week. But over the full 60 minutes, I don't know that the Patriots have enough answers for what, you know, for what the Buccaneers are going to be able to do offensively. And some of that is, you know, their defense is better, but let's say they hold the Bucs to 24 points. I don't think there are 24 points out there for the Patriots based on the offense that we've seen for the first 3 weeks of the season. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, the first 2 weeks of the season against the Dolphins and the Jets, Mac Jones didn't see anything close to this kind of defense. Last week against the Saints was a step up, and he had his worst game. I think it's, you know, I think all signs point to a Bucs win, other than, you know, the idea that, you know, Belichick has some master plan to stop Tom Brady. I don't think he does. I don't think that's something that he's, you know, he's not like Batman with some plan to beat every supervillain that exists.
Yeah.
He's a football coach, and I think he's one that's got a team that's a little overmatched this weekend.
All right, the Denver Broncos at 3-0, and they've played three of the easiest teams on the schedule. I was trying to remember or try to look up anybody that ever started 3-0 against teams that were combined 0-9 when you played them. But are you seeing anything in Denver that makes you go, look, you beat the teams you're supposed to beat. It doesn't necessarily mean you're great, but it doesn't mean, you know, you still got work to do. Where do you see Denver as a 3-0 football team?
Well, I think the thing, you know, yes, they've beaten three awful football teams, but I think that the way they've beaten them handily. They've you know, barely broken a sweat and, you know, really handled their business. I think that's something to be impressive. It, you know, there's beating the teams you should beat and there's crushing the teams you should crush. They've been crushing them. And I think that's a real positive for them. And I look, I think the defense has always been the strength of the team. And you now have, I think, with Teddy Bridgewater, a quarterback who isn't going to squander the opportunities they give them. He may not be putting up these, you know, perfect kind of stat lines that he's put up the first 3 weeks, but I don't think he's going to have the kind of meltdown games that we've seen from Drew Lock and other quarterbacks that the Broncos have had the last few years, where he's turning the ball over multiple times and making life more difficult on the defense. I think that he's a guy who's been around long enough to know that if you win a game 17-14, it counts exactly the same. And if the defense is putting you in positions to, you know, to move the ball and take, you know, take the safe options, because you don't need to risk it a lot because the defense is going to get you the ball back. I think those are the things to like about the team. But I'm as curious as anyone to see how they hold up the next few weeks, as you know, clearly they're taking on a much tougher schedule, much tougher patch of schedule.
Now let's go around the league a little bit more. The Chicago Bears and all the heat Matt Nagy took for how Justin Fields' game went last weekend, and a lot of people were angry, and a lot of people thought that it was so bad that it deserved an action by the organization. Josh, did you hear anything in Chicago about the way the Bears organization, the upper management, thought about that game or thought about the way that game was progressed? You usually don't come out in a knee-jerk react, but was this something that drew the ire of the organization?
I don't think this, you know, in and of itself, I've seen nothing to indicate or heard nothing to indicate that that's the case. But I think it is something that becomes something that, you know, you're going to watch now moving forward. It is obvious that a rookie quarterback is going to struggle. And I think that that's, you know, that's something that everyone keeps in mind. But I think that the real problem for the Bears is they didn't do anything to make Fields position him to be successful. They didn't do any of the things that make Justin Fields a better quarterback, you know. And you heard Browns players talking about that, you know, no running, no, you know, no misdirection, none of the dual threat things that make Fields such an interesting prospect for the NFL. And that becomes the question of, is Matt Nagy the right guy to develop him going forward? Is this the right, you know, the right coach and quarterback fit? You would think that, you know, if anything, they would overcompensate for Fields and do too much to take advantage of his abilities after the trade they made and you know, how much they have staked on it. So that part of it was very odd. And if it were to happen again, I think then you're going to start to hear more rumblings that, you know, they have to do something now, because you can't waste Justin Fields. If you've staked the franchise's future on him, you have to do everything you can to make him the best possible fit and the best possible scenario for success.
I ask this, I bring the caveat that we've only played three games and we still have a lot to go. But what do you see in Kansas City that's different? Do you see a problem in Kansas City, and how do they fix it?
Well, yeah, look, I think that the turnovers are obviously something that has to be fixed. I don't think there's something to be overly panicked about. That Ravens game was, you know, one of those classic primetime NFL games where every, you know, the kitchen sink gets thrown out, and the Ravens were desperate for a win and that happened. You know, I don't like to make too much of it, because penalties on Hail Marys don't get called, but that was a pretty clear pass interference by the Chargers last week. And if you put Patrick Mahomes on the one for an untimed down, I think the Chiefs get in there and score and win that game. So I think the narrative would be very different. People would still be saying, why aren't the Chiefs blowing teams out? And that to me is the most telling thing. I don't know the streak off the top of my head. I've now forgotten it, but they failed to cover in a really long time as favorites. And I think that's something where I think the urgency is where the Chiefs probably need the most attention. It sort of feels like they've gotten so successful at letting things go. And then at the last minute, you flip the switch, Mahomes throws three touchdowns and you skate. I think they need to do a little bit different in terms of starting fast and playing out in front and beating teams that way rather than, sort of this laissez-faire attitude in the first half of games, and then all of a sudden you start to turn it on. I think that's the spot for me where it feels like the most. That was in week one against the Browns. That was the way it felt. It was like the kid who shows, doesn't go to class, doesn't study, shows up and gets an A on the exam. That seems to be the way the Chiefs have tried to run things in the regular season, and maybe they need to change that approach a little bit.
I got about a minute, but I did want to get your thoughts on the Rams and the same kind of thing. Three games in, lot to play. But are the Rams separating themselves a touch here by the way they're playing in the first three games of the season?
A little bit. I think that's fair. I think you're looking, you look at that defense and that really carried the team last year, and all of a sudden you put in Matthew Stafford and what he's done with Cooper Kupp and just the difference that has made to the offense and the confidence of the team. I think all of that stuff resonates and is stuff to really enjoy. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Arizona beats them this weekend. I think that game, for all the hype of the Buccaneers Patriots game, that's the best game on the schedule this weekend, and that's the one I want to see, because I think the end of that game, that's where the pecking order is going to be established. I think the Bucs are up there. The Rams are up there after last weekend. If the Cardinals can beat the Rams, the NFC is looking a lot more interesting than it did heading into the season.
Josh, I will appreciate your time as always, my friend. ProFootballTalk.com, always a great site. Really appreciate it, my friend. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You got it. Enjoy the weekend. Josh Alper will come back. Some more thoughts on the NFL. Some of the things, little nuggets of truth that he dropped there that I want to explore when we come back on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life, Rocket can. I always like Josh Alpert coming on. You can really bounce around the league with him.
Yeah.
You really can. He's interesting. I like what he said about how the Bears, maybe the organization didn't say anything, but now they're really watching.
But it's on notice now.
Yeah, now it's like
they're under a microscope.
All right, let's see what you do now, Mr. Head Coach. You better not screw up our plan.
How much pressure? Who are the Bears playing this weekend?
Yeah, who are the Bears playing this weekend?
That's got to be a pressure-packed game for them.
You better make sure you call the right plays.
Well,
Detroit.
Detroit? You better win.
Oh, and be careful, because Detroit has been playing everybody tough.
Yes.
Like, Detroit's not messing around. They are really playing people tough.
And is Andy Dalton starting?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's a joke in itself.
They could win this game. I'm serious. They could
Detroit,
win this
game. Yes.
They look at and here's the thing about the Lions. Before you blow off the Lions at 0-3, they lost to the Niners, Packers, and Ravens. These are three playoff teams this year. And they lost to the Ravens when they needed to set a record field goal kick to do so.
Yeah, remember that.
So do not blow off the Lions. And the Bears stink. So these are two teams. The Lions could easily win this game, easily. And the Bears better be careful, like we were saying earlier. If you're in the organization, you're watching the head coach blow this kid to smithereens, right? Just let him just get tackled and sacked and messed up with a terrible offensive line because you don't want to move him out of the pocket.
He
should get fired. Fired this week.
Have we ever had this conversation of, did the coach set up a quarterback to fail?
Right, right.
I don't know if we've ever had that conversation. And
never.
that's what we're coming away from that
game. It's career suicide if you do it. It's career suicide. And yet, that's one of the reasons people screamed Sunday night that he should have been fired. Like, before he even leaves the stadium, he should have been canned. Crazy. But, you and I were talking about this. There's some really other good games besides Patriots and Buccaneers. I think this Carolina-Dallas game could get really interesting. Now, Christian McCaffrey's not playing. Chuba Hubbard is going to get the start, the Oklahoma State kid. But Dallas's offense is really good. It's clicking right now. And the defense for the Panthers is best in the league right now. They've only limited getting the 10 points a game they're giving up. What other game was I talking about? Oh, Indianapolis at 0-3 facing Miami at 1-2. If you're the Colts, you got to win this one. I'm sorry. I know the NFL gave you a rotten schedule for the first couple games of the year. You got to win this game. You want to get back in any sort of conversation. Now, are we panicking about Kansas? Now, we're not panicking about Kansas City.
Not panicking about Kansas City, but you know, something just ain't right.
By the way, my father is going to New Orleans this weekend to see his beloved Giants play the Saints at the Superdome.
Well, he should see a win if the every other game
right
thing holds true.
That's very true. That would
Winston,
be great.
Winston did have a good game last week.
I was talking to him yesterday, and I said, you know, you may not see the Giants win, but you're going to see a game at the Superdome. That's one of the more iconic venues in all the world.
Yeah, it is.
To see sporting. So even if your Giants don't win, Pop, the Superdome, all the Super Bowls, the Final Four, boxing matches. I mean, they've had a whole zillion things in that place. It's one of the more famous venues, so enjoy it. Enjoy it. He's doing this retirement traveling giant show thing, which has got to be fun when you're retired now. Just traveling to see your NFL team. God bless.